From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just 35 minutes ago, or less. Studies find that on average, adults in the United States and Great Britain check their phones at least once every 35 minutes. We check text messages most often. We check Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and the rest. And we do it all day, every day. Jonathan Haidt is a social psychologist at NYU and co-author of The Coddling of the American Mind. His Twitter profile includes the following, quote, "I think social media is damaging democracy, so I try to tweet rarely and constructively," end quote. And research has shown that girls and women are particularly vulnerable to some of the negative impacts of social media, but it can affect anyone. Adults under the age of 27 have seen their mental health suffer due to problems on social media, and a study published in the American Journal of Epidemiology found that regular use of Facebook has a negative impact on an individual's well-being. The University of Copenhagen finds that people who quit social media like Facebook report more satisfaction with their lives. And we're talking about adults here. Yesterday, we discussed kids and screen time. Today, we want to explore how to use social media for positive purposes, because amidst the dire news and research about how social can drag us down, there are plenty of stories about how it can still connect us. Used properly, it can be a tool for businesses to reach customers and for personal engagement as well. The Upstate Social Sessions are an annual conference held in Rochester. It's the only such conference held outside New York City in this state. And this year, the conference turns 5 years old. I remember when it was just an infant, and now it's got its own Twitter account. And the organizers hope they can bring together the kinds of messages that remind us of the benefits of technology while navigating some of the downsides. Our guests this hour include the co-founders of the Upstate Social Sessions. Daniel Ramo, welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And Leah Stacey is here. Welcome to you.
Thank you.
And with us in studio is Norma Holland, who is now the Director of Community Development at Digital Hive. The Digital Hive is on board as a sponsor, and Norma's here. Jeff would be here, but he's like in France or something. So
he's sipping French wine right now and not worrying about a thing.
Probably going to show people on
enjoying
Instagram.
Enjoying himself.
Yeah, he probably will.
He's going to post about it.
Rightly deserves.
Nice to see you here, Norma.
Great to be back.
On the line with us is Julia Jornsay Silverberg, who's a social media director at Telesco Creative Group and a founder of Bravery Beats. Julia, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
And you're coming here to the sessions as well. Is that right, Julia?
I am. I'm going to be speaking about the future of social media marketing, because the future of marketing is human.
Well, Julia's on the line with us, and we've got a chance to talk about a lot of different things here. The Upstate Social Sessions are going to be held October 3rd and 4th at the Temple Building in Rochester, upstatesocialsessions.com, for the full schedule and for registration and everything else, because Danielle, Leah, there's still plenty of room to register, yes? Is that right?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, we have a huge new venue this year. So we sold out the last 2 years, and we would love for everyone who wants to come to be able to come this year.
Okay, so upstatesocialsessions.com if you want to check it out. What would you describe, Leah and Danielle, briefly as the mission, and whether that mission has sort of evolved in 5 years at Upstate Social? Danielle?
So we have a multi-purpose mission. So we want to be a hub, a 2 days in mm-hmm. Rochester, where people can come and learn all about social media, whether you are the solopreneur doing the social media for your business or someone who works for a large agency who just wants to come and network, perhaps maybe meet some new employees and whatnot. So
yeah,
we want
which has happened.
Which has happened. So we want to bring people together to connect and talk about social media at all different levels and meet each other and share their ideas. Mm-hmm. So we just really want to be that connector for different people using social media locally.
Okay. And Leah, when it goes well, Upstate Social has done what?
I think it provides a toolkit for people to take away from that day, in addition to the networking that Danielle has mentioned and maybe some job opportunities coming out of that. It's giving them tools that they can take back and use either in their personal or professional use of social media. And this year, we have really tried to focus that on doing that in healthy ways that you can still use social to market or use it for entertainment, but also take care of yourself, because that's become a much larger conversation in our culture, especially I think in the last year. Like, mm-hmm. it seems like since the last time we had Upstate, It just sort of exploded, this conversation about mental health and social media.
And self-care.
Self-care has become so big. And on social media, like, there's so many therapists on social media now. There's so many self-care accounts. All right, I don't want to, like, get ahead of ourselves here, but I'm just really passionate about that subject, too.
But just even individuals opening up about their own, you know, journeys in different things in life on social media, I feel like over the past year or so has really taken off in a lot of different ways.
Let me ask Norma and Julie about this. You know, Norma, you just moved into a new role with the Digital Hive, which is involved in helping put this conference together here. And, you know, social media can be rough. There's plenty of trolls out there.
You don't have to tell me. 23 years in television, I'll tell you about some trolls.
We have seen them.
Trolls.
So
and I know you know too.
Oh, I do, and I, you know, I'm starting with you on this because I think your perspective is a really valuable one, and I'll tell you why from my perspective. But I want to hear how you sort of navigate social, because you have had to take at times an enormous amount of junk from people, whether it's about incidents in the news or whether it's just about the what women, as we talked about recently when you and Helene Biondutti Hofer were on the program, what women in broadcasting have to deal with. And you also, I think, are a very social person to begin with. So you've had to make some decisions on how often you use various platforms, whether you find good in them. I would start by asking you if any of this stuff surprises you, when whether it's UPenn or Copenhagen or others, they find that our mental health can be really impacted by the negativity on social.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it can get in your pores and can become, you know, part of the. We all have a narrative, right? Every day we get up and we talk to ourselves. And if you say you don't, you're lying. Every day you get up and you say, all right, self, today I'm going to get up. I'm going to go to work. I'm going to take care of my kids. I'm going to do the best I can, you know. But when you absorb so much of that negativity on social media, it can become part of your own narrative. And if you believe what people say about you, that is also extremely damaging. Any message you hear over and over and over is going to become imprinted on your DNA if you don't do what you can to mitigate the damage. It's just like, you know, having being, you know, having verbal abuse as a kid, you know, someone, the taunts or from an abusive parent, you know, it can become part of that merry-go-round in your head. So yeah, absolutely. You must pick and choose on a day-to-day basis what you will absorb and what you will deflect.
And what about the idea of sort of cracking back or deciding to walk away or to block or to mute?
I mean, sometimes
the temptation is to crack back.
Yeah, no. I have.
You almost never feel better when you do
that.
You don't.
But I will give you one example of when you clap back, how actually you might change a person's mind. Mm-hmm. So you may recall a couple of years ago, I became embroiled in something. A bit of a scandal, and I'm not going to talk about it openly.
I don't want people overly speculating. It's in regards to the news, and it wasn't any of Norma's direct reporting.
No.
It was more about parental corporate heads, etc. But go ahead.
So long story short, a man actually wrote to me the most vile, awful message. And I had been deciding for days whether or not to write back to the thousands of people who were writing to me. And in many cases, I did. And my sister was like, you're a juggernaut. You just, you know, take a hit and you keep coming back and you writing all these people. And I'm on, you know, the GIF or GIF of Kermit. And he's, you know, on the computer and he's typing real fast. That was me. That was me.
That GIF is you?
That was me for days. I was wearing a green suit. You didn't know. And I wrote back to this guy and I said, listen, who was so mean to you as a child that you feel it is okay to talk to another human being this way? Shame on you. And I knew this guy. He was from the same town I live in. I go, dude, I probably run across you in Wegmans. And you're going to talk to me? You don't even know me. Well, I let him have it. I didn't care. I was like, filter or no filter, I'm letting this dude, I'm putting him right in his place. And after I did it, I felt so vindicated. And I was like, there. And I walked away. And then I felt rotten. I said, oh, why did I do that? You know, when you start getting in the muck with someone, it feels awful. Sorry. Long story short, he wrote me back with this apology. You're right. I'm so sorry. Can you please forgive me? I should have never reached out to you with such vitriol. I don't even know you. I said, well, okay, you know, we can talk. And we did. And we had a conversation. Long story short, he didn't agree with me. He didn't agree with anything I was like in terms of whether or not I should have done blah, 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 whatever. But he apologized. So sometimes even the trolls have a heart. You just gotta really dig deep. But what did I expend to get to that point? And was it worth it?
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the return on investment with that's probably pretty low. But at the same time, you and I have talked for years about how it used to be before social media, phone calls and emails, and people never think that you're going to get back to them. They'll send you the nastiest thing, and they just don't expect a reply. So oftentimes I'll reply and I'll say, boy, I'm really sorry I've disappointed you so much and that you know so much about me, considering we've never met.
Well, sometimes that disarms people.
It does, yeah. Because they don't expect to get it. They think they're just blasting out into the void.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I think social has made that more immediate and more constant. And then the question becomes, how often do you want to invest the energy to do that? You got a return on that one case, and that probably mattered. It mattered to him.
Well, I guess it did, because I remember it, and it stuck with me as an example.
But
of
you probably responded
humanity.
To a lot that got no response or just more trolling, and then you're like, well, am I just feeding the fire here? So,
yeah, I remember. I let go at this one lady. She said something like, "You watch yourself, girly," or whatever, or "girl," and I said, "No, you watch yourself, Pam." Her name was Pam.
Pam.
You let it? It's like, not yourself, Pam. You think you are. Call me girl. I'm not your girl, Pam.
I want you to take over my Twitter account just for like a year. Just for like a year.
Do you ever see the Key and Peele anger translator, Luther the anger?
Oh, man.
But I digress.
That could be you. So let me turn to Julia Jornstay Silverberg, whose own Twitter handle talks about the intersection of social media work and also mental health and how that's important to you, Julia. So how do you see this question of the way social can impact our mental health positively or negative?
I think that social media can definitely impact our health negatively if you're not following the right people and if you're not intentional about how you're using the platform. I think it's so important to make sure that you're following people that whose content inspires you, that makes you feel good, and actively unfollowing people whose content makes you really feel that sense of comparison. I think that's kind of the biggest downside that social media can have on a mental health standpoint, especially as you mentioned with women and young women. They're looking at social media and they see these beautiful, kind of glamorous lives that other people are living. But social media is just the highlight reel. Mm-hmm. It's important for us to keep that in mind, because otherwise it is going to create this sense of comparison. You're going to feel like you're not wealthy enough, like you're not successful enough. And if you are constantly comparing yourself to what you see on social media, you're comparing your full story to someone's highlight reel. And so I think it's really important for us all to make sure that we understand that people are posting their best. Most people aren't posting on social media in the midst of a panic attack. So we have to understand that what we are seeing are people's highs, and empowering ourselves to use these platforms to create connections to people who really do resonate with us. There are, as Leah said, there are therapists out there on social media. There are so many people talking about wellness and putting out really positive content. Yeah. And we have the ability to create a connection with them thanks to social media. And these people could be halfway across the world. And these tools allow us to create that connection. And I think it's really important to focus on the quality and not the quantity. No one cares how many followers you have. We care about how you make your followers feel.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And when you look at the actual studies on this, one of the really interesting parts for me out of the UPenn study that was published in the Journal of Social and Clinical Psychology, the conclusion is not to drop social. It's to ask ourselves, what's our intention with it, and to probably cut mm-hmm. it down, mm-hmm. but to be more focused on what we're trying to achieve with it. So let me read some of the quotes from the woman who ran the study, is Melissa G. Hunt, and here's her statement. She says, here's the bottom line. Using less social media than you normally would leads to a significant decrease in both depression and loneliness. These effects are particularly pronounced for folks who were more depressed when they came into the study. It is a little ironic that reducing your use of social media actually makes you feel less lonely. When you look at other people's lives, particularly on Instagram, it's easy to conclude that everyone's life is cooler or better than yours. And the results, Hunt says, confirm what others have suggested regarding maybe reduction, but she does not say that we ought to be cutting out social entirely. It suggests we don't need to cut it out, but to curtail it and to become more focused with why we are using it. Does that make sense to you, Julia?
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly, because I don't think that it really is applicable in today's world for us to think about cutting out social entirely. For so many of us, that's how we communicate with our network. It's how we stay in touch with our family, with our friends. So removing that entirely, I actually don't think that it, I think for some people that would actually be a detriment, because you would feel that loss of connection. But definitely being more mindful and intentional about how much time we are spending on these platforms. So many people talk about that if they were to just trade 1 hour of time that they kind of spend mindlessly scrolling and do something outside, take a walk, journal a little bit, doing something for yourself, that could be a really beneficial change to make. So I definitely agree that it isn't about removing it entirely. It's about adding some more mindfulness about how we use these tools so we continue to use them in the ways that they were created, which is to amplify connection.
So let me ask all of our guests one aspect that I've sort of observed over really the last decade. Twitter's been kind of a force for a decade now. Facebook, obviously, longer than that. But Twitter is the place where I see a lot of brands and companies that will take some heat, not just trolling from customers, but people who are very upset about a specific thing. I don't know why you're smiling over there, Norma, but you probably got more stories there, too. But here's what I've sort of observed. In the earlier years of Twitter, people would sort of rail against a bad experience. Could be something they bought at the grocery store. Could be a problem on an airline. Not that any airline has ever had a misstep. But let's say hypothetically an airline, you know, a flight was canceled or something was missed. And then companies started to figure out that if we are forthright about this, if we can directly talk to customers who've had bad experiences, we can maybe turn them into actual brand ambassadors by turning them into fans of ours by getting it right.
Absolutely.
Even if we have to be excessive here.
Yep.
What I've wondered now is, how do you then balance the scales where people seem to, you know, you buy one thing at the grocery store that's not perfect and you're like, yo, Wegmans, this apple had a bruise. What are you trying to do here? Kill me? And Wegmans, don't send your legal team. I'm sure none of your apples have bruises. But it can feel excessive. And the question becomes, how do you know when you're actually dealing with just a troll who's trying to score something for free versus an actual experience that you ought to be addressing? Julie, I'll start with you. How do you sort of strike a balance there if you're managing social?
I think it's really important to directly respond to every single tweet that you get as a brand. So whether it's positive or negative, and like you said, there are definitely some trolls out there that are just trying to see what they can get when they complain. Oftentimes, those trolls are not going to continue the conversation. They kind of want to see what they can get immediately. So as a brand, I think it's important to get to the heart of it. Ask some details. Ask for a picture of the receipt. Ask for the specific location. Have a real conversation. You do want to make that person feel seen and heard, but as a company, you want to make sure that you are not spending too much time just catering to people that are just trying to get something for free. So oftentimes when you just take a really direct approach, you ask for the information needed that would quantify either giving the refund or whatever it is. A lot of times those trolls actually don't have that information and they'll give up quite quickly, but it definitely pays off in the long run to make those people feel seen and heard, because we've seen so many times managing Twitter accounts for different art organizations across different industries. Twitter is the place that people will go to complain. And oftentimes all it takes is one tweet to say, hey, we're so sorry that you had that experience. We would love to follow up with you and understand a little bit more about what went wrong. Do you mind sending us your phone number or your email address? They will respond back, oh my gosh, thank you so much. I wasn't even expecting a response. So you can really turn unhappy customers into raving fans just by making them feel seen and heard.
You know, Norma Holland, that dovetails with the idea that when people would write to news anchors not expecting a response, what's up with trolls not thinking there's going to be a response there? Why do human beings have this troll side of our personalities that we think gets to come out from, you know, sort of under the bridge and then just say whatever? Can we curtail? I don't know.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Julie.
I think that we feel safe behind a computer screen. People say things online that they would never say in person. So I think that's at play. And I also think that oftentimes the trolling is happening from an individual to either a celebrity, to someone with large influence, or to a brand. And oftentimes that individual feels like they're speaking to this kind of nebulous entity, especially if you're speaking to a company. Yeah. You feel like you're talking to a logo.
Yep, that's a really good point. Though I will say, remember when news websites had comments, and I thought, you know, if we just take the comments away,
that was a dumpster.
if we take the comments away and we push them to social media like Facebook, no one will behave like this because their name and face is on
even
it.
Worse.
And I was wrong. People can do really terrible things even when their name and face is associated.
I thought the comments section was a dumpster fire, but you go to Twitter and it can get just as ugly, too.
The Facebook comments,
the vitriol
on the news story?
Or now it's Facebook yeah.
I mean, you might as well just gargle broken glass. That's going to be the most enjoyable experience of your day.
I feel for companies. I feel for the person who has to sort through the comments to take out the ones that are absolutely inappropriate.
You folks are not paid enough.
No, they're not. I know people who do that for a living, and I know they're probably listening right now.
Not
going
to. Also sitting at this table.
But Norma, tell me about
aid to the men,
you know, Digital Hive works with a wide range of community partners. Tell me about the opportunity when somebody's upset on social that you see and how you navigate that.
Oh, goodness. I think, well, as was stated, I mean, you have to respond. All of us have an innate feeling or desire to be heard. And when someone has had a bad experience and you respond to them, that's a really important thing. It would be the same as if someone came into your store and said, you know, this is, you know, I bought a coffee machine on Sunday. It was broken. I brought it back to the store. They returned. You know, oh, we're so sorry. You know what? Go get another one. We'll just, you know, we'll do the swap right here. Mm-hmm. It was easy. And it didn't take a lot of time for that person to deal with my situation. People just want to be heard. So go ahead, respond to them. Because it's essential. You've got to treat the online as you would be in person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I still like to buy things from people, from stores, from face-to-face clerks. Mm-hmm. So I always think of, when I'm on social media, I think of another person literally in front of me. So businesses have to do that. It's imperative. If they wish to foster goodwill, you know, now with that just, because listen, there's other people watching, reading. I wonder how that person got dealt with. Let me see. Mm-hmm. People do that kind of reconnaissance to see whether...
Sure.
A company is, you know.
Absolutely. And so you know, Leah Stacy, who is, I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this. I mean, you're doing all kinds of work now in the community.
You can talk about it.
Okay, so you're also, when you're not organizing Upstate Social, you are doing work for...
Recently went self-employed.
Went self-employed.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and mostly what I do is copywriting and community management and social media content creation for a lot of hospitality brands.
But when it comes to... figuring out where to engage.
Mm-hmm.
So far, where we've sort of navigated is to say, on the personal side, your mental health is at risk. We now know this through various studies via social. Pick and choose where to engage. That doesn't mean don't engage with people who disagree. It means avoid the vitriol and the trolls, mute or block them. But on the business side, on the brand side, you can't really block or mute. You've got to at least listen and engage one time on every complaint, yeah?
Yeah. That's kind of been the policy that I have developed with the teams that I work with. And I'm also managing most of the time Google and Yelp reviews as well. So
Yelp.
Yeah. So when you're talking about restaurants, it brings in a whole nother side to things because I think Twitter is less so the place that people go to complain about a restaurant, and Yelp is more so the place they go. And we have a great Yelp community manager in town, Megan. Hello, if you're listening. She's fabulous. But we do have to respond to things. My experience has more so been that they are so surprised when they do get a response that a lot of times it scares them, and I never hear from them again.
Interesting.
Yeah, that happens more often than not because I am not afraid to just confront people in a very like, hey, let's take action way and say, here's our email, here's our manager's name, here's what we're going to do for you. And again, these are discussions that I have with all the teams I work with. And of course, like if they came up to one of the general managers or a host and said the same thing, we would deal with it exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. So that is carried across all of our channels.
Sometimes people might even feel embarrassed, Daniel Raymond, when they get called out for their behavior, which they realize doesn't really reflect what they would like to look like in person.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you feel about that engagement piece then?
No, I completely agree with everything that everyone has said. I've, you know, chatted with so many people, you know, in response to their complaint. And as soon as I respond, they are oftentimes like, a lot, not everyone, but oh my gosh, well, that's great. Thank you so much. And in my own business, oftentimes I will call people, just call them directly.
Talking about the Rochester Brainery.
Yeah, like if I'll ask for their phone number. I don't think they expect, you know, a phone call, actually. I don't know. But I'll call them and it's, you know, and sometimes it's just it's a nice way to talk about something. Let people know online that you are going to handle it. Sometimes it's a longer conversation than what can happen online. Get the opportunity to take it offline and actually have a discussion about it. It's important. And like Norma said, you know, I would have that conversation with anyone who walked into the business with a complaint. You know, why not treat it the same online?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. Julie, before we let you go, mm-hmm. some final thoughts from you on what you're looking forward to with the conference coming up.
I'm just so looking forward to getting to meet people that I have been connected with online in person, because I really think that that is the beauty of these kinds of events. Social media does open the doors for us to connect with people all over the world, but there is nothing like taking that digital connection and actually turning it into an in-person connection, getting to hug people, shake their hands, and just make eye contact. I'm just so excited to get to see everyone, speak and meet everyone, and just talk about how we can be more human in our marketing, because I really think that that is the future of social media.
Julia Jornsay-Silverberg is Social Media Director at the Telesco Creative Group and founder of Bravery Beats. And we'll see you here in Rochester on October 3rd and 4th. Thanks for taking the time for the program, Julia.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll see you in October.
Thank you very much. And so after our only break of the hour, we're right back with Leah Stacey, Daniel Ramo, the co-founders of Upstate Social Sessions, which are back in Rochester on October 3rd and 4th at the Temple Building. And you can still register and check out the full schedule if you want. UpstateSocialSessions.com. Norma Holland is here as well, the Director of Community Development at the Digital Hive. And we're going to work through some of your feedback, including Jeff, who says, why do people think they are entitled to a response to anything? We'll see if our guests think you are entitled to social contact. That's next. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to local youth climate leaders about what they experienced in Friday's strikes. They went to New York City, but millions of kids walked out of classes around the world to demonstrate for climate action, to call for change, and change in more rapid fashion than most governments are willing to go. We'll talk about what the kids and the youth climate leaders want next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get some of your feedback. And we've got Calvin first up. Go ahead, Calvin.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, Danielle and Leah. It's good to hear you on the radio.
Hi.
So I have two questions, and I might have missed my first question, but in terms of, you've talked a lot about, the one guest talked about, just self-care with social media and that being a large conversation now. Is there any programming for this year sort of around that? And then my second question is, I'm not able, this is the fifth year of Upstate, and every year I plan to come and then something comes up with my schedule. So I'm going to be in Ithaca during the time of this year, but is there any like online streaming of any of the workshops or webinars for this year? And if not, do you plan on maybe connecting with folks like myself who just can't get in person in the future?
Okay, thank you, Calvin. Guys, go ahead.
Yeah, so we do get this question quite a lot. The very easy answer, which I'm going to be very honest about, is that we are not a high-profit conference, and those services are very expensive. We would love to offer those things. If we had a partner sponsor mm-hmm. who would offer those things, I think we probably would. Mm-hmm. Or if people were willing to pay for those things, which we have tried in the past, and they were not willing, then we would be able to offer them. So it really is just strictly a budget decision mm-hmm. for us. We would love to be able to offer this more digitally. But also, I mean, I think part of our mission, really, what we've been talking about for the past 30 minutes is to get people face-to-face. It's getting you that IRL in real life experience that we don't have in social media. I think a lot mm-hmm. of people, and I know Danielle and I talk about this, we work in social media. We're very isolated. We're freelancers. We're self-employed. And to have this 2 days with our people, you know, people who understand these conversations that we're always having, is really exciting. So I'm sorry, Calvin, that you can't make it. Yeah. And I hope that we someday will be able to offer this as a streaming or maybe later a video mm-hmm. session.
I will say, though, that all of our speakers, if you were to reach out to one of our speakers separately about, I don't know, with any questions or anything, like all our speakers are always so, so great. So, you know, Donna
and they're
has,
they're tagged and everything.
Yeah.
It's very easy to contact people who are speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that, you know, not to speak on their behalf, but, you know,
yeah, well,
I'm sure that they'd be happy to answer a question or two if you had something specific. Or
sure. Yeah, and about programming around mental health, Julia is actually speaking about that.
Mm-hmm.
She will be integrating that into her marketing, the future of marketing is human conversation. And also, we have told every single speaker this year that it's sort of an underlying goal to talk about social good and mental health through social media. So a lot of people have tried to work, and I've been looking at some of the presentations rolling in, a lot of people have tried to work that in. So I think it's going to be sort of an undercurrent this year, which I'm really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and let me just say something about self-care. You know, Calvin's asking about self-care, and there's some dissonance. There's sort of this clash of realities here, in that we know that social media can increase anxiety, it can increase depression, and sometimes the best thing to do is not to ditch it entirely, but to maybe take a break or to pull it back. Calvin is someone through what he's been able to build at 540 West Main. He's creating a place for the community to come together, to learn, to have classes, to have community dialogues and conversations. I mean, they do just about all kinds of different stuff there. And Calvin is everywhere on social media. He engages in a lot of different places and a lot of different platforms. And someone him like him might feel like, you know, just because of what I do, I've got to have my foot on the gas all the time. And it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you view just self-care as a term? I mean, you said earlier this hour, that's important to you. I mean, sort of mental health care, self-care.
Well, you know, somebody who works in our field doesn't have the luxury of deleting their Facebook. I have so many friends who are like, oh, I finally deleted my Facebook page. All of my brothers have deleted their Facebook pages.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, and they're all younger than me. They're all, you know, 30 or younger. And I look at them and I'm like, that sounds great. I'll never be able to do that. But I also really enjoy what I do.
Right. Yeah.
It is. And again, Danielle and I talk about this sort of thing, like, You do have to step away, and then you know you do that with the understanding that you're probably going to come back to a lot of notifications, but you figure out when you can step away, and it's kind of about time management. A lot of times,
yes.
Like when I can step away from my phone, there are certain days or hours. I mean, after covering Fringe and performing in Fringe for 12 days, and Danielle was running social for Fringe, like I think both on Sunday took a chunk of time where we did not look at our phones. And just enjoyed the 80-degree weather.
It was still wrap-up day, but...
Okay.
So, no, I'm just kidding.
That was just
no,
me.
It was good. I slept in a little bit longer. No, it was good.
Two chocolate croissants that
yes,
day.
Yes, exactly. Ooh. It's a two chocolate croissant day.
Sounds good.
But yeah, exactly. It's definitely planning, carving out that time and planning out that time and getting yourself organized enough so you can kind of do that. That's what's really been... beneficial to me.
It's like vacating your office for a week, right? You have
exactly.
to tell everybody. You have to plan for the vacation, literally. Like you have to tell people, I'm leaving. I won't be,
people,
be around. It's like a way message or something.
People don't want to understand that, though.
Right.
It is very hard to put up the away message of social media, like that vacation responder that doesn't exist in our field. And I think that's part of why we do have this sort of exhaustion in our industry.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that, I mean, this sounds trite, but I actually think that there is something really important about the point that I think Danielle and the guests were just making, which is that if you wait till you're really torched, you can get to a dark place and then you crash and maybe you're off for a while. If you schedule it, if you build it into a schedule, whether it's regularly, weekly, you know, in the same way that some families do, no social media, no devices at the dinner table, you know, or a tech-free hour at night. I've got friends who do Sunday morning tech-free, you know, for the family. But if you build that in, even to your business, you don't think, Leah, that customers would get on board and go, okay, no, I get it.
Like, well, I think at a certain point, like especially with the restaurant accounts, they just wait. And if it's something like somebody trying to book a table on Instagram.
Well, yeah, that's different.
All the tools that they need to actually book that table are actually available without me having to respond.
Sure.
But of course I do. I've not been good at this in years past, like taking that time, going, like putting my phone away if I'm with family, or friends. Like sometimes Danielle and I will be out with other people and we're both on our phones and it's kind of like this, oh shoot, like we probably should stop working and like just enjoy a glass of wine with our friends or whoever we happen to be with. But there's sort of like that we have this like camaraderie in that way, but it's not healthy and we are both trying to get better at that.
Yeah.
That's no, I look at it like you ever call a doctor's office and they say, you know, we're not taking calls between 12 and 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, who the, what? How can you? Oh, okay. Well, I guess I got to eat too, you know?
Sure.
And then I happily wait, right? Because I need them, right? Yeah. And then I call at 1. Mm-hmm. Oh, 1, you know? And no, I think there's a necessity to step back. You know, sometimes I'll be at home and I've got like one child in one arm and I got the phone in the other. I go, what the hell am I doing? I put the phone down, Norma. Deal mm-hmm. with the thing at hand, the mm-hmm. child who wants to be, you know, in your face or the person who wants to talk to yeah. you. But you're like, you know, trying to fumble hold the, you yeah. know, and it's ridiculous. And so you know, I'm guilty. But I'm guilty. Who am I to say?
First of all,
I'm guilty.
You call it 12:59 and you ought to give them that full hour. You ought to give them that full hour.
Look, I know you had a protein shake. It doesn't take that long to suck it down. Just get back on with the day. Chop, chop.
Second of all, the notion of kind of beating yourself up for you know, not being as present. I think the key is knowing mm-hmm. that we're not going to be able to be perfect, but knowing that that effort has to be continual.
You've got to be self-aware. I mean, yeah, you ladies are exactly self-aware. It. You get it. Look, mm-hmm. you know when you're acting a fool with your phone. You know when you're, like, sure. with each other.
Yeah.
And you're talking to other people. And you're on your phone. And you're with each other. Like, you are aware. That's half the... I mean, I know it sounds trite, but that's literally half the battle.
I agree. Yeah.
I'm going to bring up something that people probably don't expect when they think about social media. And they think about... maybe you've never thought about this in the context of why certain things might burn you out or cause stress. And that's introversion. You know, we have a population where mm-hmm. people fall on a scale of extroversion and introversion. And mm-hmm. introverted does not mean shy. It means you get your energy from having some solitude, you know, yeah. whereas it costs energy to be among or interacting with people. Extroverts get their energy from being around people. And that's, you know, what they thrive on. So it's not that introverts are always just shy or don't want to be around people, but there's a cost to that. And for introverts to be involved in social media, whether you're using it for personal or for business reasons, it can be probably even more difficult at times. And I wonder if this rings true at all. I'm going to start with you, Leah.
So I have one of those, like, I think I'm an ambivert.
Is that both?
Yeah, you're like right on the line or something. Yeah, we've talked about this too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so there are some days when like I desperately need to be around people and like get that energy. And then there are some days when I'm like, I gotta be alone. I need everyone to leave me alone. I need no one to call me. If I get a text, I'm like, ah. And I just have to hit refresh. And I think that's part of the, you know, the self-care we're talking about. Yeah. Social media is weird though, because it's like not the same energy as going to a party. It can be, I can't describe the sort of draining it is. I can't compare it to anything else. But when you do spend so much time on it, and you're not just, you know, doing something purpose-driven for work, and you're just kind of like mindlessly scrolling, it's this weird sort of exhausting.
Mm-hmm. It's a drain on your energy level. Yeah. It's like a energy vampire or time vampire.
Yeah.
You know? And then when you're done, you just feel like, what did I do that for?
Yeah. It goes back to, like, what could I have used this, you know, half an hour? And yes. I actually have I have a timer set on my phone. So, like, if I do hit an hour of social media use, which, like, every day I do because I'm running so many accounts.
Yeah.
But it still pings me. And it's like, you've spent, you know, such and such time on social media today. And my phone just gives me that little notification. But I leave it on because I'm even if I'm not done working, I still know in my head, like, this is how much time I've put. Yeah. This is how much energy.
I ignore it and I go, you're not the boss of me, you know?
Dismiss.
Phone.
You know?
Dismiss notification.
Who's that person in the phone?
Like the message needs to be a little more direct. It'd be like, get off your damn phone, right?
They gotta let you customize yours.
Right? Yeah. They should.
All
we
caps.
Can customize
That's
Siri.
That's like the auto response.
Yeah.
I need to get off.
Like when you text someone and they're driving, it's like, I'm driving right
yes,
now.
Yes. It's like,
do you feel a little affronted, but you're like, oh, how dare you tell me you're driving and paying attention to something else, you know? But we need that. I think sometimes we just need to be told. Someone needs to hold up, our phones almost need to hold up a mirror to us, which is what those timers do.
Sure. Mm-hmm. It's like, right? Every single time, like, I am away for a day or two, I wish there was an autoresponder for text messages as well. Mm-hmm. And, like, I can put this on for, is there? There's got to be.
Is there?
I don't think there is.
Do you consider yourself?
Someone let us know.
Extrovert, ambivert, introvert.
I think I'm ambivert. I like being in small groups. Like, if I am in, like, a large group, I am very bad at small talk. Very bad at it.
That's not true.
I always leave those conversations saying, like, what did I just say?
Well, like, you just say, well, I'll take my leave now because I have no other words to use with you. So I'm going to walk away.
Yeah, I personally don't feel like I excel at those particular conversations.
It's a skill, though.
A skill that I may have missed. So picking up. So I think it's like somewhere in between. I love being in a social situation where someone is better at that than I am. And then I'm a little bit more comfortable. But I don't mind talking in front of groups. Yeah. I don't mind
getting on stage.
Yeah, getting on stage.
No, she
anything
doesn't.
Like that.
Because I saw her backstage. I know how good she is on stage. Remember last year, Little Shop of Horrors? You were amazing.
No.
What?
Rocky Horror.
Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You're like half right.
Wait, what did I say? Yeah. Oh,
Little
come
Shop
on.
Of Horrors.
I'm sorry, Danielle.
I've seen that too.
Danielle, you were so wonderful on stage, though. Truly. Thanks. Fearless. Truly.
Thank you. But so, see, those are lines I'm just saying that were written for me. I don't need to, you know.
By the way,
small talk.
Yale's Erica Christakis, who has been on this program and wrote about the dangers of distracted parenting, reminds us something that I do think actually expands beyond just parenting, which is that there's a lot of talk about what screen time is doing to kids. And we talked about it yesterday on this program. She says, adults ought to be asking about what screen time is doing to ourselves, particularly if we are dividing our attention from our children and the screen and trying to split it. But I think that's true for other relationships as well. And I think one of the real outcomes of this conversation, as we talk about the upstate social sessions, is that we don't have to ditch it entirely, but we can be more intentional.
Yes.
We can schedule it. We can schedule time not to use it. Mm-hmm. And we can be more aware. And we can have phone alerts, even if we ignore them, letting us know when we cross certain
thresholds. There's tools.
There's really good tools because there's a lot of good that can come out of it. Mm-hmm. Let me hit a little more feedback, and we'll get back to Jeff's question now. Jeff emailed earlier this hour to ask, why does anybody feel entitled to social media or otherwise contact, whether it's with a business brand, etc.? So we were talking earlier this hour about the way that customers sometimes will complain via social media if they didn't like their hamburger or their flight or their not flight, or whatever the case may be. And the idea being that, you know, it's good for businesses to respond to everyone who complains via social media. Jeff's saying, well, why? Why do we think we're entitled? Are we entitled, Danielle?
I mean, here's the thing. If you're a business and you're on social media, I would hope that you're there because it is a good customer service tool. And that you're not there and you're just floating around in the social space and not responding. So in a way, businesses are putting themselves out there to be that customer service tool. And so then you can't always fault people for trying to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Do people go too far sometimes? Absolutely. Do they in an in-person conversation as well? Absolutely. So I think in some ways, they're serving the purpose of what we want social media to be, which is that conversation. But it can go too far.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the word engagement, which is a word that we use all the time, speaks to this conversation. Like it's a two-sided conversation. If we're engaging with our consumer or our follower, that says, you know, engage. Whether that's responding to everything or most of it. I mean, I think when you look at accounts that have just, you know, millions of followers, and we actually have the social media lead from Bon Appetit coming as one of our headliners, and I'm really interested to see how she's going to talk about or how she will talk through her engagement strategies, because the mass of response that they get to things some days has got to be just, you know, more than they could possibly ever respond to.
It's a different scale.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a different scale. I mean,
we were talking to one of the social media folks from Kodak. Not that I was listened to him speak at a event at the
Was it Steve?
Chamber of Commerce. What was it? Yes,
Steve
I think
Carter.
It's
Steve Carter.
He's going to be at Upstate.
Is he
Social?
Good?
Yeah.
Well, he had a great, you know, he's managing how many handles. Like, he's just, you know.
Sure.
But, like, those folks, I always feel so badly for them in some ways because they really have to, you know, talk about being like this with the phone.
But he's actually pretty good about it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he was one of the original team members for Upstate Social.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah.
And we watched him sort of grow in his career.
Right.
He also helps run Explore Rochester and co-founded that.
That's
and so,
right. He did talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Steve does actually a really good job sort of having a life outside of his job.
You know, that's the thing. You talk about life, right? Is life... Do we bisect life? Like, there's online life, and then there's, like, life in front of us.
I'm so glad you said this, because your former colleague, Seth Palmer.
Seth!
Seth.
I love him.
He just said on Twitter, there's a lot to be said for being intentional with social media or web presence, a lot of pressure to be showing your authenticity or being on constantly. Mm-hmm. And Gia Tolentino has a new book out that I really want to read, because you want to listen to a powerful one-on-one podcast interview, Ezra Klein on the Ezra Klein Show with Gia Tolentino, about performance. And the word performance is the key here. Every time we are representing ourselves in public, we're essentially performing in some way. I mean, I'm on this program. It's largely me. People who know me off the air, I'm pretty much the guy. But there's still a performance that I'm fitting the role of talk show host. When I'm on Twitter, I'm trying to be incisive and sometimes funny. That's what I'm performing as. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I think that's largely me, and there's some meta stuff here with how when your performance actually becomes your reality. But there is a pressure to, as Seth says, be on or to be in performance mode. And when you are with different people or writing for different people, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, whatever the case may be, you may be performing in different ways. Mm-hmm. And isn't that sort of exhausting?
We send out ambassadors all the time, and they're not always our true selves, right? And we want to send out the very best version of ourselves in person, online. Well, there's an exhaustion. How are you always, you know, you can't be perfect all the time.
It's not perfect,
you can try.
It's like authentic, right? And that's why people loved you on the air, because you are as close to on the air as you are off the air. And that's one of the things that I've always tried to be. People will meet me and they'll be like, oh, your voice sounds like it does in the radio. And I go, I don't have a radio voice.
No, you got to be yourself.
I don't want to perform, but there is that aspect.
There is, and Seth is so right. I mean, there is this pressure to be engaged and be the very best version of yourself. You know, when you're a brand for a business, when you're a brand like, you know, you're a business, people are not going to give you that grace to be yourself. It's just, you better give me what I want, right? All the time. You always have to be the same way. You know, McDonald's can't make like a subpar burger because it was having a bad day. People expect it to be the same all the time.
That's
you
so
know?
True.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I could get away with it a little bit because you're getting your news from a person who lives and breathes and not like a bot.
But then on social media, think about, you talk about McDonald's, Wendy's is a phenomenal social media
Wendy's
account.
Is great.
You know,
yeah,
and I don't know who that person is or those people are, but they are good on there. I don't know how authentic that is to who they are, but they've created a persona. And I think I don't know where I'm going with this other than to say I think it's healthy to talk about the fact that that pressure exists, to Seth's point, because and the closer I get in my life to not feeling like I'm performing, if I'm tweeting, I'm trying to be me. If I'm on this program, I'm trying to be me. If you see me out in public, I'm trying to be me, because I think it's exhausting to feel like, well, now I have to shift into this mode or that mode.
What did I tell you when we were downstairs, Stace, Leah? I was downstairs and I was telling you about, I was at Wegmans and a lady said to me, I was in like shopping mode, and a woman said, you don't smile. Why don't you smile? You need to smile more.
A woman said that to a woman?
Said it to me.
It's 2019.
I said, oh, I'm sorry. Did I hit you with my cart or something? Well, I said, no. She said, no, you're not smiling. I go, well, I'm looking at the bacon. I'm like really trying to figure out,
price
shopping, right? Like I was focused. So, I mean, it's unrealistic. It's an unrealistic expectation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, how do you turn it off? When do you turn it off?
But Norma, let's
for
be
how
fair.
Long?
Let's be fair. Is it asking too much of women to smile?
Look, brother.
And
take
now,
his mic away.
And
you better
now,
sleep with one eye open.
And now I am performing as a troll.
And I'm a
shutting
troll.
Back.
Do you know that I once trolled a troll?
I believe you
would. I found out exactly where he lived. I know all about you.
Oh, man. I don't want to hear the end of this story. You have to go to Upstate Social Sessions to get the end of that story. But If it's not clear to anybody, that was totally me trolling, and I am just as
Do you even have to explain that?
I hope so. I hope not, but you gotta make sure that, listen, there's probably a lot more stories at Upstate Social that will be shared, and the Upstate Social sessions are back for their fifth year on October 3rd and 4th, and they're proud of it. They're proud that it's the only such conference outside of New York City in this state.
And women led. Two women in their 30s.
Oh.
We are the team, by the way. And we have a designer, Justin Doucette. I need to give him a shout out because he does incredible work, and he works so hard.
He does.
And we could not do it without him.
Yep.
That's sleek looking. The interface online looks really good.
But I hope what you've seen this hour is that it's realistic. It's not this idea that social is perfect or solves everything. It's about opportunity, finding opportunities, and building and seeing where you can be productive and constructive, knowing that there's also a lot of toxicity out there, and how do you navigate that? So I appreciate that. October 3rd and 4th at the Temple Building in Rochester, upstatesocialsessions.com for the schedule, and do register if you want to hang with them. Leah, Danielle, great work as always. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Norma Holland, otra vez.
Otra vez, mi amor.
Let's do it again.
Okay. Hasta luego.
I know where to find you. Short
break. You know where to find me.
Come here, Norma Speak.
Now it's not like a troll comment.
Who do you think you are? Yeah, well, I know where to find him, though.
I know where to find
troll.
You.
That's a great story. I'll tell you off camera. Yeah. Or off
tell me
the radio.
In 10, 9.
I know where he lives.
8.